Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Today we're joined by Rob Kemp from all the way up in Carlisle. It's a pleasure to have you, buddy. You're here to talk about your journey and your experience of male infertility. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, all good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on, obviously. Pleasure to give my side of the story and hopefully be able to help a few others out there that are going through something similar to myself. So thanks again for having me on. Look forward to having a chat with you this evening.
Oh, mate, it's our pleasure to have you on. And like we said in emails, like the logistics setting up for this, the podcast, you know, your voice is so, so important and it's going to help so many guys out there that are in a similar position to you, maybe a bit further down the line, maybe just kind of entering the strange world of infertility, shall we say, a very challenging world. So thanks so much for coming on, buddy. I guess we should really start right at the beginning, shouldn't we? Like, can you give us a little bit of background in terms of, you know, pre-fertility and kind of the story leading up to your diagnosis or finding out about your infertility?
Yeah, sure. So, like you say, I'm living my trade up in Carlisle now. I'm from Kent originally. To be honest, I'm just your average guy. Love my football, love me fell walking with my dog, love me non-alcoholic beer now, which I'm sure we'll get onto at some point as well. But yeah, so I'm happily married. I'll just crack straight onto the journey, I suppose, because it might be a long while by the time I decipher through the whole timeline of it all, like I'm sure a lot of people do. But by the time you sit down and go through it all, you realise that there is a fair bit to go through. So after a few months of trying with sort of no luck, my partner had a doctor's appointment just to see if there was anything sort of going on. She had an irregular cycle, but there wasn't anything sort of outstanding or major. The doctors initially told her that she had peak polycystic ovary syndrome, which didn't really sit right from the start, but it was what they put it down to for her irregular cycle. She was only showing one symptom at the time, which was the irregular cycle. So for them to say it's definitely polycystic ovary, she was a little bit confused, but thought, right, sort of fair enough, we'll go with it. There wasn't too much of any sort of answer or results from that. It was just, that's the reason for your irregular cycle. So problem solver that she is straight off the bat. She went and had a private scan to confirm if it was or wasn't the polycystic ovaries. And it confirmed that it wasn't polycystic ovaries. So in between sort of the time, obviously we're still talking about it, still failing month in, month out, if you like. And then one time when we were away on holiday, I suppose to ease a bit of pressure off of her, and it was just genuinely a passing comment, I just said, who says that you're the issue, if you like? Why can't it be me, sort of thing. So we went to just the local pharmacist, and I've got a over-the-counter, not even semen analysis, an over-the-counter semen test to see if there was semen, yes or no. It came back negative. At the time, my wife found it hilarious because I went and bought this over-the-counter test, which was a yes or no, and all along she was sort of saying, "What's not quite what you bought that for, but it's gonna say that." Do you know what I mean? It's a crappy little test. So for my own peace of mind, or for our peace of mind, I then phoned the doctors and booked in for a my first semen analysis test. So I went and done that, and then received a phone call for the semen analysis test from the doctor, and got told the dreaded now, but got told you only need one. They didn't really go into much detail over the phone, but they said, it's okay. You only need one. So I was like, right, okay. I asked for a printout and an email just to try and get my head around what you only need one really means, because she was rattling off a few numbers and words that at the time I'd never heard of, you know, your morphology, your mobility. She was saying a few words, but not going into any real detail at all, other than you only need one, so keep trying. At the time, our friends were going through ICSI because of a male fertility issue, and from us talking and just having a general sort of conversation about it, we then sort of me and my mate shared and compared results, if you like. And my results were actually come back lower than his, and he was the one that was going through ICSI. So that for ourselves sort of set off the alarm bells more than anything. Then done a little bit of research. I've done what I thought at the time was making lifestyle changes. Again, it was just sort of cutting out the coffee, improving a little bit of salad into my diet, because I was never a great eater of fruit or veg, doing a few bits and pieces and seeing if anything changed upon my second test, because I then had a second test and there was no change after that. Obviously that led to a bit even more sort of confusion, if you like. Really, we felt like we were in a bit of limbo almost from the start, because obviously I said about my wife, they didn't really say or push for any further investigation for her, and I was there with two sperm results without it showing of anything great. So during that time of us sort of waiting and sort of wondering what was next, my wife, she phoned back from her side to get and ask for more of a sort of in-depth fertility referral, you know, really start getting the ball rolling. We've had a couple of tests showing no good. She's been told she's had polycystic ovaries, and it turns out that she doesn't. So really, what do we do next? So she contacted the doctors, and again was told, right, well, we can refer you to Newcastle, but it could be 9 to 12 months. I need to state, with us being in Carlisle, Newcastle is our closest sort of area for anyone that will deal with it. So anyone in Cumbria will need to travel. So we said, fine, like, you know, 9, 12 month wait probably is normal. We'll see it out and we'll wait for this letter. In the meantime, I again spoke to a few friends and family, and one of my friends, their sister-in-law is works in the industry just by chance. I was having a beer takeaway, watching the football, had a chat to my mate, and by chance his relative works sort of within the industry. So she sent over sort of a bit more information, because I didn't know much about it at the time. She sent over some information. She mentioned a couple of names and a couple of groups. Obviously, we've spoken off air about the guys at Test Him. She mentioned the name Jonathan Ramsey, Dr. Jonathan Ramsey. So I thought, right, I'll get in touch with these, because up until now, it was also worth noting, really, that I hadn't, as much as we said about sort of my numbers, they hadn't really been confirmed by anyone other than like our friends. And those numbers weren't confirmed by our friends. We were just comparing results, and it was the fact that he was going through ICSI and I wasn't. So Ian Stones, lovely guy at Testing, he confirmed that there was potentially an issue, and he put us in touch with Jonathan Ramsey, and I went down to London for a meeting, and an appointment with him. With him, I had the full works, the full test works, all the advanced testing, the DNA frag, the blood test, the oxidative stress testing, the infection testing, genetic testing. We covered a lot and thought, right, well, hopefully we can get to sort of the bottom of this. Just before that visit as well, I did, and I needed to sort of push, but I did have a varicocele, an ultrasound test, which the NHS confirmed I had a 3 mil varicocele, but they weren't going to do anything further. So I went down with a little bit more knowledge, i.e. I had an ultrasound. And with Jonathan Ramsey, I had all of those tests. Tests come back to confirm that I had a very high DNA frag. Everything else seemed okay within parameters. So my oxidative stress, which is one I was a little bit concerned about because I'm a factory worker, especially at top conditions, it's the night shifts. All of those come back okay, other than the DNA frag. And he done sort of a visual inspection just to try and gauge about potential size of the varicocele that I had. So I had the meeting with him. He looked, he took one look, he was brilliant. I mean, everyone, anyone that's ever dealt with him knows how good he is. He took one look at the varicocele and said, yep. We then obviously discussed about the DNA frag, and he pinned it pretty much most of my infertility issues being down to the varicocele and poor DNA fragmentation. After that, we then managed to get the meeting with the NHS. That all come about, it is worth noting as well, just with that meeting. So it was a 9 to 12 month wait for my partner. And all the while I was sort of dealing with the GP, all they were ever sort of saying to myself was that all my information needed to be put on my partner's profile. So it was, she leads it and I go along and do whatever alongside it. But off the back of the 3 mil ultrasound that they found, off the ultrasound scan that they found, off of the back of that, because he was just, the doctor was just going to leave it, they weren't going to touch it. But I actually physically said to him, I said, well, can you at least do something? I know you won't work on it. I know you're not going to do an embolization, but can you at least refer me or help me or, you know, show some form of progression on our journey, if you like, by doing something? And it was him that said, the only thing that I can do is I can attach like your results and send them over to Newcastle. So we went to their appointment in Newcastle, again with the hope that they might be able to do something, and there was no interest in doing anything other than going straight to ICSI. We felt, after everything that we knew, and we had done obviously a lot more research. I mean, I'm trying to explain it in 5 minutes, and this is all over sort of over a year. But with the research that we done, we felt that the best line off the back of the DNA frag and the recommendations that I had, the best way of going about it could be potentially trying to fix an issue rather than jump into the end conclusion, which would be ICSI. But unfortunately, from the sort of moment we walked in the door, any idea of any intervention was shut down. It was, our options were ICSI or nothing, if you like. So we said, right, fair enough. You know, we can't miss off the opportunity. Bearing in mind my wife's age, I mean, she's 35 in January, so it's at that borderline where you think, right, you don't want to delay things too much because we need to sort of go a bit further forward with it. So we went, sort of went forward, and we said, yes, that's fine. We'll go ahead with the ICSI. Obviously, come out slightly disappointed. The ironic thing, and it is worth noting as well, we come out disappointed because of the research and because of the people that we have spoken to. If we didn't do any of this research and talk to anybody, we would probably have come out of that appointment actually quite happy and okay, because we would have felt like we were getting somewhere. You know, we've been waiting. If we had waited the full year, we would have been waiting that full year, and then finally we're on the waiting list for IVF. But we come away a bit disgruntled because we know that there is potential interventions that can improve it. So after that, I was then sort of straight on the phone politely to Jonathan Ramsay, saying that there's no chance of the varicocele embolization being done. What are my next sort of steps? So he said, come down, I'll do an ultrasound with yourself, just so we can get a clear reading of the size of it. Because I'm not sure if it's all over the country, but I know that a lot of NHS guidelines, where we went, NHS guidelines was anything over 3.5 mil, they will then look in further. Mine was showing as I had one at 3.2 mil and two at 3.4 mil. So although I had three in total, one in a particularly dangerous area, I didn't hit that criteria of it needing to be up at 3.5 mil for them to be able to do anything. So Jonathan Ramsay said, come down, I'll do a proper one. I'll hold my hands up if we're, you know, if I'm way out and it's not as big as I believe, then I'll hold my hands up for it. Done the ultrasound, confirmed, like I say, 3.2 and two at 3.4. So that was me then booked in for surgery with Dr. Stephen Moser, who completed the embolization last month. So that is where that is where I'm at, really. I've had the embolization. We're on the waiting list and scheduled to start IVF in scheduled to start the IVF in January, and we'll see where we go in January as well. I'll be getting a retest to obviously see if there is results, you know, a clear improvement from the embolization. But in whole and as a picture, and again I'd say it to anyone, is don't leave any stone unturned if you can. You know, explore all options, not in a horrible way going back and asking questions, but there's nothing wrong with asking questions to anyone in and around the industry, because you might get an answer or you might get further forward than just being told that it's low and that your only option is IVF. So
yeah,
mate, that's kind of it's great. It's kind of a bit of a summary of where I'm at or where we're at as our journey continues.
It's hard to summarize so much that happens in such a short space of time as well, really. But yeah, that's quite incredible, really. And so in the end, your embolization, did it happen on the NHS or through Jonathan Ramsay?
Needed to be done through Jonathan Ramsay. I did the ultrasound through the NHS, but the ultrasound or my varicocele wasn't significant enough in their eyes. One, for it to be affecting fertility, from their words and not mine. And two, it didn't reach that criteria because mine was 3.4 mil and not 3.5 mil. They then couldn't investigate it or didn't investigate it further for any form of embolization through the NHS.
So interesting what you say, like, you know, about those perspectives, because like you mentioned, you went into that appointment knowing and having knowledge and coming out of it a little bit disappointed about how you were, like, you know, the advice you were given by the NHS. But actually, had you not known what you knew, you would have thought, oh, this is good. We're making progress here. So I think that's a really powerful bit of advice there as well, is to get informed. And, you know, we do have to caveat that some people simply can't go and get that private investigation, which
well,
I understand.
100%. If it wasn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's taken, you know, chunks out of the savings, and we've had to really focus on if it is something that we do, and it is like almost our last shot of it. So finances, I fully understand, and I would never, ever, you know, really pressure someone when it comes to any of that sort of side of it.
Yes, it's completely subjective, and everyone has their own situation. But yes, it's important. I think, regardless of going for a private testing or not, essentially the biggest and key message there is to really advocate for yourself and to push and ask questions and question why not, because it's our own health that's in discussion here and our futures, because we should never believe that we have to take the first answer just because someone's got a title, like in front of their name.
Do you know what really struck me about what you've just said, Rob? You know, there's a lot to unpick there, but what really struck me was that you weren't given any real clarification, and those first results weren't explained to you. And at that point, you weren't informed about what was out there. You know, you've gone out and found your own research, done your own little bit of research, and as you said, you're fortunate to be talking to the right friend at the right time, who then put you in touch with someone. And it wasn't until you spoke to Ian that you actually got some clarification on that, where that should have come from your doctor, even if it was in the very basic form. So I can imagine that really hit home with your emotions wise, like what does this mean? But sadly, it's something that, I mean, Sean will back me up here, we're hearing more and more from guys. In this conversation that we're having, not just on podcasts, but also outside when we're talking to people at events and on social media and things like that, this is a reoccurring thing that, you know, basic information isn't being given to these guys and needs to be done. Do you think, like, knowing what you know now, if you had some pre-knowledge, that you would have pushed for clarification earlier in terms of actually, like, I want to know exactly what this means? Or do you think that was a confidence thing in that kind of, it's been described as a bit of a rabbit in the headlights when you first get that information. I remember it distinctly, like I just didn't know what to do with it. But do you think now, if that happened again and you're in a similar situation, you'd have the confidence to go, this is what, I want to know what this means? And the reason I ask that is to try and give the guys that are listening out there that confidence to do that. But it's all right to ask. You've just said that, but would you push from knowing what you know now? Would you push more?
Yes, on the right, with the right things.
Yeah,
I feel with this topic in particular, because we have got as far as we have got, I feel like I've sort of pushed as much from myself on this topic as much as I can. Again, I'm never out to, like we've said with the GPs, the jobs they do is amazing. It is just a cover. It is just a general practice. It is that knowledge piece. I would always recommend, it's not even such a second opinion, it is the recommend the research to look into what you can, because you don't know what's out there.
Was that basic information about like what morphology and things like that explained to you, or was it just that you're literally just given a number and this is your morphology?
No, it was just the numbers. To be honest, I'm not sure 100% if they even have full knowledge as to what the definitions or what exactly they mean. I mean, it was numbers that were given to me. I don't know what were they. It was say the 2% morphology, 2%. So normally we're looking at about 4%. So because it's not zero, the big one that stood out to me at that time was the concentration. It was showing us less than 1 million, but it wasn't zero. So it felt like it was a way of them saying it's not zero. So one means that there is a chance. So the explanation of what each thing meant wasn't there. It was more reading of on the left hand side there's your result, on the right hand side there's what it should be, and it's just reading 24 and it should be 47, for example. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, because sometimes the way they display it is really really difficult to understand. Well, it is. Like, and each like clinic and lab will do things differently as well.
You know? Yeah, we found that out. Sorry to interrupt you there. We found that out when we went to Newcastle and I gave my, so literally it was my fourth. I've given four semen analysis to three different people, basically. I've done two with a GP, and the guys in Newcastle couldn't use that information because it wasn't their lab. I've done one a month prior with Jonathan Ramsey. They couldn't use any of Jonathan Ramsey's results against their own. I've done one then with the guys over in the Life Centre, who, again, the people, fantastic, but through their own sort of policies, can't use any other results, so I had to go and give a fourth one. Now, I'm comfortable, like, yeah, I'm comfortable giving poor semen analysis, but I appreciate that some people would really not enjoy that. And I was going into, especially that fourth one, I was going into that fourth analysis knowing what the results are going to be. So, again, it's another, you know, potentially knocking you while you're down, if you like, because it's more tests and more tests where you know what the results already are because you've done three prior and you've done one a month before you're doing the fourth. So
that can be difficult when you're convinced that you know what the result's going to be and you're just kind of questioning why again, all because of procedural things, really, not being able to accept other tests and stuff. But so I think, right, just to confirm exactly where you're at, so you had your embolization and you're essentially now in that 3 month period where you're allowing the sperm cycle to go through clean living and then go for another test in January. Is that what's happening?
That's exactly it. Yeah, it'll be around, like they always say, sort of 90 to 100 is when you'll see some improvement. 6 months is when you'll see a lot of improvement because of the timing and the timeline. Obviously, always being quite close and tight, it gave us that window before we start IVF. So we start IVF in the middle of January. We've got an appointment next week to probably confirm a date. But alongside that, either just before, potentially just after, but I'd like to get in before, I'll be having another test just to check to see if there has been that improvement.
How do your balls feel now you've had it? Do they feel lighter? It's a really odd question, but when I had mine done, like, I had a lot of aching beforehand and that kind of stopped. And within days, it felt like, yeah, my balls were lighter, like the pain had gone away. It's quite amazing the impact a procedure like that can have on how it feels.
Yeah, exactly. Agree with yourself. I never suffered terribly, like I've heard some, you know, real shocking stories of always being in pain. But I think, and I've heard it been put in this way before, you don't realise how much it aches or how much pain you are in until you've had it done. So now, like you say, absolutely no feeling, no pain or anything like that at all, as well as before. And this is something that, you know, varicocele doesn't turn up overnight. So this is something that's been there for years and years, really. To have it cleared, you then notice a difference after the fact.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's amazing. how different it can feel. How did you find the procedure itself? Because I know there will be guys listening to this that maybe are waiting for, have the varicocele dealt with, or know it might be something they need to have looks at. Because it's quite a daunting thing, you know, in terms of any kind of procedure around you, obviously your testicles. How did the whole procedure go for you?
Procedure was absolutely fine, honestly. No issues at all from start to finish. So I had mine down in London, and it was the Fitzrovia Medical Centre. And we arrived at, me and my wife turned up at midday, 12 o'clock appointment. Had our own room, sort of a few different checks as you go, just the general blood checks, sort of make sure everything's correct, a few questionnaires, just some general medical forms. And then we got sort of whisked away on a bed, slightly intrusive. in terms of you are in, laying down in a room with 6-8 folk in there with alarms going off and screens, but they're there for your safety. It isn't, didn't find any real pain as such. The incision was in at the thigh, and he sent some medicine around my lower back to really inflame sort of the nerves and try and inflame some of the veins so he can do his best form of work on it. So there was, like I say, a slight pain on my back, but awake all the way through it. Had a wonderful nurse sort of next to us, just talking us through it, talking about general day-to-day conversation. Stephen, Dr. Moser was there operating and chipping in with the odd witty one line for anyone that knows him, he's got in him whilst working. So the procedure itself was fine. Back to the room, 2 hours resting, coming in, same again, checking your blood pressure. And by 5 or 6 o'clock, I'd left the 5-6 o'clock at night, I'd left the hospital, resting up obviously for 4 or 5 days. Don't go firing straight into anything major, but I had a resting up sort of period where I felt a bit achy, bit of a sore back, a bit sluggish, but nothing major. And away we go, sort of thing. So for what it sounds like you say, when it is, you know, for anyone who's preparing for it, I'm in an arming about it, a bit concerned about it. My experience, it was absolutely fine.
It's definitely one of those things, the thought of it is worse than the procedure from my experience. I mean, and we should really ask Sean, because you've had yours, haven't you, Sean?
And, yeah, I had and a bit of a different experience, but
I was going to say, but then you had a microtesia as well, and if we looked at the both of them, one's definitely more comfortable than the
other.
Oh,
yeah.
But it's the thought process that I think catches people out, anything with your testicles. But it's important, guys, here that, you know, it's not an overly intrusive procedure, is it?
Yeah, no, you're right.
In terms of on the podcast, we talk really openly about our feelings, you know, in terms of how we felt going through fertility. Like, what were your initial feelings and thoughts, Rob? Like, when you, as you went, found out about your infertility, and kind of how has that developed?
The overriding feeling is potentially frustration, but with me and my wife have dealt with it. We've dealt with it well. I've dealt with it well, and I've said all along, really, as much as I'm, you know, I'm talking about it and telling people about it, for their sake, as much as it is for their sake, there must be a part of it that I don't know about that is for my sake as well. So I'm obviously finding that helping. Haven't needed to go down the stretch of any form of counselling as such at all. But I've done a fair bit of reflexology over the last year to 18 months. My wife's friend is sort of well involved in the industry. She does a lot of the Reiki, reflexology. I've found that as a personal help. Again, sometimes not even for the body balance stuff as such, but as much for your head. Having conversations about what's on your mind, it gets you thinking slightly differently, or thinking about a few things that you wouldn't have thought about before. But coming away from that, feeling great with it, to be honest. So my emotionally, like I say, feel like we are dealing with it okay. But again, that is all thanks to talking about it. Thanks to knowing even something silly. Well, it's not silly, but say the WhatsApp group that you guys have got, any sort of support call, or any, you know, having that feeling of the support being there, if you like. I think all of that has helped me massively. I know you guys and a lot of other guys say, I wish I had the opportunity or had these people around when I was going through that journey. well, the fact that I've found it and I've sort of got it now, it is something that I lean on a lot. So emotionally, I'm okay, but I think emotionally I'm okay because I know that I've got the support of everyone there. So it's a, yeah, it's a big part of it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's something that we, like you said, we say it all the time. If that was there, it would have made it a hell of a lot easier for us. But you know, that's why we're doing it. We're through it. We're now in that position where we could go back and make a positive out of the shit situation that we went through. And yeah, I'm really glad that you found that support and it has helped you. And that is such key advice for any other men out there, is if you're listening to this and you still haven't sought any external advice or engaged in any support groups, just listen to Rob there and how much it's helped him. It will really, really push on things for you when you start getting out of there, like out of your head, really. Like, and if it is just reflexology and or anything else, you know, just opening up.
It is huge. And the other thing as well, I was going to say on that part as well, is that I feel really like the male perspective and the male opinion from people like yourself, like we've said, is that everyone within this little family, if we call it, all seem to be on that same page. I feel what from sort of the flip side or the female perspective, my partner, she'll be going on, there's a million and one groups out there, and they're all conflicting stories and they're all putting their own little bits and pieces in, as well as the one thing I feel like from the male side is that everyone really seems to be on that same page of, okay, this is where we're at. These are the things that we can do, so on and so forth. So I'd say that with everyone being together, that male opinion, we all seem on the same page, which is obviously helpful. But it's just where you were saying with the, you know, the difference in support or the difference in emotion. It's from a male side, I've found, and I think it's probably a big part, is because we want it simple. We want it in layman's terms. We don't want a big documentation with all scientific stuff, or we don't want so-and-so's opinion from there. We just want it as is. And I think that, like I say, that everyone is on that page to keep it. To keep it all with the same vision.
Yeah, definitely. I think in terms of men, we just want to know what we've got this issue, how can we solve it? You know, and I think often with partners and wives, and they like a longer plan. Well, we don't. We just want to know what the issue is and how do I solve this. And once I've solved this, I can then think about the future. But how can I think about the future when I just need to solve this problem first? And you spoke there about the support groups and things like that. It can be an incredibly lonely journey. We've talked about it so many times. So I think the fact that you've got that support in really early is definitely helping. And, you know, it's great to hear, as I second what Sean said, it's great to hear that you're finding what we're doing so helpful and the other things out there that are available now so helpful. So if any guys are really beginning to struggle, you know, pop it into Google. There are things out there now, you know, male support, infertility. You're in a good place. You started with our podcast, but there's a lot more out there, isn't there? Did your wife or partner, did she experience similar emotions? And like, were you kind of side by side in terms of emotions, or have you found you had to support her a bit more while coping with your own emotions?
Similar but the same. Yeah. I think her concern is, it's not a concern, but she's a problem solver like me, so it is wanting them sort of answers. It's the time, the waiting, and always at the back of her mind the age side of thing as well. I'd say a lot of the time she's dealt with it almost better than me, but that's because I'm the big emotional one and she isn't at times. So the main thing emotionally is that sort of the time and the waiting, and it's the unknown, not knowing where we're at, not knowing where we're going with a lot of it. Again, we said about you know, coming out of certain appointments, being unhappy because you know more, or coming out of other appointments being happier because you feel like you're getting the sort of progress. She does the reflexology as well, so I think that could be, again, a part of it, even subconsciously. That side of it all started as a way to try and get her sort of cycles back on track, but has actually led more to the mental side of it. But I mean, you guys will know, it's at times it can be tough, obviously, but ultimately with your partner, your wife, you know, it brings you together as well. When you talk about it at the right times, it brings you together. We have our days, and again, I'll say it to anyone that's listening, absorb the information at your own pace and when you feel comfortable doing it. Because at the start, again, looking back at the start, I felt like there was times, or we've said about it between us, and probably done the same, you're just stockpiling this information, and it's probably not actually helping you. So you're listening to back-to-back-to-back-to-back podcasts. You're online for 4, 6, 8 hours, and it's no good for you. So regarding the information, absorb it when you feel, you know, if you wake up one morning, you think, right, I'm going to have a look into this. Listen to your podcast for an hour, then switch off, go about your normal day from there. So I think that's sort of helped, or what we've learned, again, even with our emotions, is it doesn't have to be 100 mile an hour 100% of the time. Absorb the information when you feel necessary.
Yeah, it can definitely be all of, like, just the whole thing, absorb your whole life, can't it? Quite easily, yeah. If you don't kind of put those, I wouldn't say barriers in place, but put those things in place to just control that anxiety and feel like you have that little bit of control. Otherwise, you can definitely feel like it's a hectic, hectic world.
Yeah.
Control's massive, because so much of a fertility journey is out of our control. Is when you regain elements of control in certain places, like we've already mentioned, diet and lifestyle and things like that, and information and how much and when to consume it, it makes a massive difference, because it just makes you feel that bit more in control. I don't like, there's no other word for it. It's, you know, it's really, it can really flip things, like, mentally, I found. So in terms of, you've mentioned, like, how you and your missus are navigating it, how about friends and family? Have you shared it with them at all?
Yeah, they've been brilliant, to be fair. And not surprisingly brilliant, but I'm comfortable to speak about it. Obviously, I wouldn't be on here, and I'd be burying my head in the sand if I wasn't. But everyone I've spoken to about it has understood, asked questions, and again, going back the way asking questions for me to them. I've had various people, friends that have been through similar journeys, and you would have never known. I wouldn't be where I'm at now if I hadn't spoke to those friends about it, because it all come off the back of comparing semen analysis results, or being put in touch with, you know, so-and-so. So my friends and family have been good with it. I do feel that there is more of a shift with the stigma side, sort of now. Feel like there potentially is still a barrier there, and the odd occasion, you'll know what it's like, people maybe don't know what to say in that situation. But in general, my friends and family have been brilliant. My work as well, it is worth mentioning. My work have been fantastic. It shows that no one really speaks up about it, because our HR manager's been in the role for 16, 17 years, and I'm the first male fertility IVF patient person that's ever gone to her. They've been very good with, you know, appointments and understanding, and if you need help, and they've been pleased with me for, you know, for going out there and actually approaching them, because I've had, since talking about it with friends at work, like a like I previously said, I've had three guys in particular, and that's three guys have said or have come and told me their journey, and they worked for the company at the time, and they were, one of them in particular was taking holidays there. He was doing this, you know, taking days off there, doing shift swaps here. And you just thought, well, says now, again, that if I had known, or if I was brave enough, if you like, then I would have had that, you know, I would have had that weight off my shoulders. So everyone I've been around has been brilliant with it, to be fair, which is positive, obviously.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear. It really, really does show and highlight to other people who might be listening to this who are still struggling with it in silence, just how empowering it can be to open up. I mean, you mentioned work there. Once I opened up to my line managers, I hid it for a year and a half doing what your mate said. I was taking holiday, swapping shifts, coming in later, leaving early, but like making up hours elsewhere, going sick sometimes. It wasn't healthy. It was putting all this extra stress on me that actually, once I opened up and told them, that they removed all that for me because they were so understanding, like your workplace were and are. And yeah. I was like, oh, I wish I'd done that sooner. Because, yeah, it was like a weight off my shoulders completely.
That's it. You'll be so surprised. I think, in general, you'll be so surprised what may, you know, you'll be surprised in a good way what may be said or what may be done, at whether at a workplace or your friends. It's, yeah, it's very good.
As Kira and I say that all the time, especially when it comes to friends, is just give them a chance. Like, we think, oh, they won't know. They won't know what it's like. They won't understand. Try them.
Even if it's testing the water, you're not saying go in and give them all the medical stuff. Just in passing, mention it that you're maybe not in the best place, or that you've got a hospital, or, you know, can you do this on Thursday? Oh, no, I've got a hospital appointment. They'll ask just as much. And like we said, if they're your friend, then they'll understand. So,
yeah, it's good friends that really shine through in those moments.
Yeah.
What was really interesting for me, Rob, is when you said that once you started talking about it, three other guys approached you and said, oh, yeah, I went through that as well. Like, I've mentioned it previously, like, you feel you're on your own, but we're surrounded by people that are experiencing this, but we don't talk. And once someone starts talking, like, it's like you just crack open the door and the door's flat open. You know what I mean? People will start talking about it. So, as Sean said, give your friends that chance. Give your colleagues that chance at work. And, you know, even if it's not your colleagues in your office or in your factory or whatever, in terms of go and speak to your HR, you know, they do have legal obligations to kind of listen to you. They can't just chuck you out the door, you know, if you go to them with an issue. And so many more are getting on the understanding of this is a big factor in society. So it's really good to hear that you've had such a positive experience of that, because some don't. So it's really nice and positive to hear such a great relationships you've got in your life to be able to support you through this. When prior to obviously like your diagnosis, what was your knowledge about male infertility? In terms of, was it something you'd learnt at school in sex education, or was it something you'd kind of read about in a magazine, or is it something that completely hadn't even crossed your mind?
I think it was the last one, to be honest, mate. Not that it hadn't crossed my mind, but it wasn't educated. Any form of sex education was the same old cliche that we say, if you have unprotected sex, you will have a baby. And that was the end of it. Was, you know, an hour in whatever year eight would be classed as, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 year olds for an hour. And then it's left from there. I think the educational side could do with improving, but could even be introduced in the later years at school, where it isn't all rosy, that everything happens, oh, if you do this, then this will happen. And you'll understand a lot more. I'd even go as far as, say, bringing pieces in at sort of the university late age or level, just doing a module. I did a sport management and sport coaching degree. There's no reason why one of the modules in there couldn't be related to health. Just do it as like a health or lifestyle module. And then within that, you can have a piece on sort of fertility. So at least you'll then have a little bit more knowledge going forward in your, you know, as you go into your 20s and then into your 30s, where you might have an idea. Because like we've said, I didn't know about any of this, not personally or not really for anyone, until it hit me. And luckily, hopefully, it's not too late for myself personally, but I'm leaving it late-ish to gain all this knowledge. So, the knowledge side is definitely something, like we've said, could be improved. All of my knowledge has come from these podcasts, really.
It's interesting that, because it's just those little basic bits of information you need to know, isn't it? Like, you know, people, we talk in schools about why they shouldn't drink alcohol because it's bad for your liver. It's actually, you know, there's some evidence to show that it's bad for your fertility. You shouldn't smoke because it gives you lung cancer. Well, actually, also, it's bad for your fertility. It's just putting that little sentence into what's already available will make youngsters, and I agree, like those late teen years, early 20s, like that's the key age to kind of get it in. Because most guys, from my experience, don't find out until maybe 25 to 30 and maybe even later than that. So if you get the knowledge in a couple of years before, they might actually go, similar thing to what you did, Rob, like they might just go and get a sperm test kit and try it. You know, these little bits of knowledge, because we push so much on women's health. You know, from a young age, they go and have smear tests and they, you know, they have this, a monthly cycle, or they're meant to have a monthly cycle, which indicates to them that they're having these cycles and they are, in brackets, they can reproduce. It's not always the case, is it? But they've got a physical sign that's there, where men don't. So, you know, education at a younger age would be amazing. How that would look, I think it will come at some point, but it's definitely something that needs addressing, and to avoid situations like ours, all three of us. Yeah, a little bit of knowledge would have gone a long way when I was 25.
It's that little piece. I think you hit the nail on the head saying that it's almost there, as in the don't drink, but add it in as an extra factor. That's why you shouldn't excessively drink. Add it in as an extra factor. If you go on the street and speak to these kids that are sort of early, mid-20, even if it was me sort of then, and someone said, you know, do you want to have kids? 100%. I've known for a while, and a lot of them will know for a while that they want to have kids, and it'll be like, right, well, that's affecting the chances of it. So, yeah, a small piece could make a big difference for sure.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, and I think that's the thing as well. It's just little nuggets here and there. Just get it, put it in people's minds. You don't have to overload them with information. Like you said, you know, us blokes, we like things simple and then have those foundations to build on.
Mm.
Well, Rob, I've got to say, this has been an epic episode. I've been making notes for and there are so many bits that we could use as highlights that actually our editor's going to have a hell of a job. So, you've blown me away with just how you're coping with this, and you're still in the thick of it, but you're not just surviving, you're thriving. And
yeah.
You're clearly, like, you know, you're remaining positive, you're remaining educated, and you're supporting your missus, and you're just, and now from what you've done today, you'll be supporting so many other blokes by giving away your tips and strategies and how you faced it and how you are facing it on a daily basis. So it's quite incredible. Thank you.
No, I really appreciate them words. I've said it from day one, and I can say it now because we're 40, 50, 60 minutes in or whatever, but I've always said for months, if I can help just one person, as in that one person doing a bit of research earlier, then that would be, that'd be amazing, because it is speaking and shouting about it that can have that effect. Oh, you know, 6 months' time, so-and-so goes and talks to someone in passing because we've said and spoke about it today. Go and talk to them. And you don't know where it's going to end up. So thanks again for your kind words also.
You're welcome. But we'd like to end with, like, let's take it in that scenario where you're saying you'd want to help one person. So if you were talking to that one person now, hypothetically, what one piece of advice would you give them?
Talk about it again at the right time, in the right sort of setting, if you like. Just mention it in person, because you don't know where it may lead. From an information side, you don't know where it might lead, and from a personal side, because all obviously, like we said, all the while for this, if it wasn't for me mentioning it to people, I could easily be completely none of the wiser, thinking that I only need that one sperm and would still be a hell of a long way back from where we are today. So my one piece of advice to people, and you hear it from loads of people all the time, but it's true, just in passing, mention a comment, and you never know what you'll be surprised. That's how I leave it. You'll be surprised.
Well, thanks so much, mate. Like Sean said, it's been a great episode, and your positivity is amazing. And the structure that you've got around you in terms of your own personal support, in terms of how you're supporting yourself, and also, you know, your friends and family around you is amazing. So thanks so much. We really appreciate it. It's going to help so many guys, and it's been a pleasure, buddy.
No problem at all. Thank you again for having me on.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at The Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.